The only reason I was surprised at what I was seeing on the screen was because people were gaslighting all over the internet. I'm including family members. I'm including people in the PCA. I'm including all kinds of people telling us how wonderful this was, how family friendly it was, how wholesome it was, how beautiful it was, how loving it was, how patriotic it was. So, you know, this gaslighting of what we saw and what we could see with our own eyes was what was surprising. But it wasn't surprising to me that the Super Bowl had scantily clad people grinding against each other as part of the show. That's just par for the course for the Super Bowl and for the NFL. And it just, you know, is what it is. And honestly, you have the right to turn on and turn off. We should know by now. You know who the act is, and you can have that right, you know. And I honestly think that's fine. But I don't know how Christians can be defending this. That's what I don't know. Well, I didn't think I'd be doing an episode so soon. I got the James Baird and Daryl Hart episode. I was thinking of calling it The Beard versus the Heart. But that just released 2 days ago, and usually I'm like on a 1 week schedule, or, you know, maybe twice a week if there's stuff going on. And I already have stuff planned for the rest of this week, and I just thought I had some things to say about this last weekend. In particular to Bad Bunny. No, not Bugs Bunny. Bad Bunny. It's amazing that supposedly this is like the number one, I don't know if it's TikTok or Instagram or YouTube, something in the world, more than Taylor Swift even, but this is the first time I've ever heard Bad Bunny. But also Kid Rock with the TPUSA show. So we got Bad Bunny versus Kid Rock. No, that's not what it should be at all, honestly, and that's some of my point for doing this. But also, like, on the heels of what's going on around the country with ICE and protests, but then President Trump's share of a racist, and it was racist, I don't believe it was intentional on the part of the administration, but it certainly has those overtones. And I've seen the original video even, but with the Obama's faces on animals, apes or something. And it's demeaning. And to me, this is all related about what's going on in the culture. And so that's what I wanted to talk about, because, you know, for a number of years, the Super Bowl halftime show, I mean, I'm thinking back over a dozen years ago, and maybe even 15, and maybe longer, I don't know. It's not something I watch, if I even watch the Super Bowl. I generally don't even watch it. I know there's the whole debate in the Reformed world about, you know, the Sabbath and this and that, but that's for a separate conversation. I didn't watch this year's Super Bowl. I didn't watch the halftime shows, not because of any conviction not to watch them. It just, I was doing other things in the house, actually sitting in this very screen porch, enjoying the evening. But I'm just shocked at the defense of the indefensible, in particular to Bad Bunny. And, you know, I'm a glutton for punishment. I can't just ignore things. And one after another, like people singing the praises of the Bad Bunny performance in the Super Bowl. So much that I thought, wow, maybe it was fine. It must be fine. Here's what one PCA pastor posted on it. I'm going to try to share screen. It's Hot Take Monday. That was a great Super Bowl halftime show. I'm not even a fan of Bad Bunny and can't name a single song of his, but that was the most visually interesting, intentional, and coherent halftime show in recent memory. He's of Cuban descent, so he talks about some crossover there, and he talks about his father and the sugarcane fields. And I'm from South Florida, and I love so much of the culture I grew up around. I've been to Puerto Rico multiple times. I've been to Mexico multiple times. Of course, Mexico and Puerto Rico, two different peoples and places, but some cultural overlap there. But different places and peoples for sure, and proud peoples. And it's good to be proud of your heritage. I'll continue to read his post. And we'll talk about the cultural stuff in a minute. I was surprised that Bad Bunny did as wholesome of a halftime show as he did. I feel like I had been prepared by the algorithm for some provocative blasphemy to be displayed. In the end, it was more like a movie production inspired by the visual style of the film I Am Cuba. On a related note, I've noticed that many Christians have become less familiar with the concept of common grace. And so now he's going to educate us all on common grace and the beauty of, you know, the Imago Dei in people's lives and all of that. And he thanks God for the experience. And certainly he's allowed to his own take. But as I saw more and more of these posts like this, hailing the beauties and the wholesomeness of the halftime show, I was compelled to finally watch it and see for myself. Now, I knew I would not understand the words, the lyrics, and that's okay. I want to talk about that in a second. Part of the issue was how these events became polemical against the other event culturally, and I want to address that. But so I watched half of this halftime. I couldn't even watch the whole thing. Now, I didn't mind the walking through the sugarcane fields and, you know, walking by different, you know, things in the street, I guess, street fairs. I don't know the cultural sort of thing about this, but again, I've been to Puerto Rico, I've seen it, and I liked those things, and again, I do enjoy experiencing other cultures. Being Arabic myself, I love Mediterranean and Middle Eastern food, and that's given me a palate that's able to enjoy all kinds of foods and experiences. And so the multicultural aspect of this wasn't a problem for me at all, and I really don't see why it would be for anyone. But then pretty quickly and pretty soon, I saw what was happening in this performance. All kinds of inappropriate dancing, simulated sexual acts. He couldn't stop touching his groin for some unknown reason. I didn't quite understand that. It's almost like his hands were, like there was a magnet there and he had to keep touching himself. A lot of that in the dancing. And I noticed very intentional camera angles that would try to avoid those images, but then also simulated sex, homosexual sexual acts were taking place, and those quickly panned to some other place, and just a lot of gratuitous physicality. Now, I will say I'm used to that from the Super Bowl from 10, 15 years ago. It's just the Super Bowl is, you look, it's a business and it's giving the people what they want. And it's, you know, generally it's after whatever the hour is that used to be on TV where they can just, you know, play other things, like not for kids, and it is what it is. I find it personally unfortunate because the Super Bowl is something that families and children watch, and it's marketed to children. And, you know, we used to have decency in society to understand that, and to understand there are things that consenting adults can watch and take part in, but there's things that we like to protect our kids from. And this goes back to, again, just a complete loss of that civil use of the law, which, as I say, is not simply codified legislation and penalties for the law, but it's stigma and it's social acceptance of something. And it's gone in our society. And so I'll say, like, as The only reason I was surprised at what I was seeing on the screen was because people were gaslighting all over the internet. I'm including family members. I'm including people in the PCA. I'm including all kinds of people telling us how wonderful this was, how family friendly it was, how wholesome it was, how beautiful it was, how loving it was, how patriotic it was. Because I guess at the end, again, I didn't watch the whole thing. There was maybe God Bless America was said or sung or something. So, you know, this gaslighting of what we saw and what we could see with our own eyes was what was surprising. But it wasn't surprising to me that the Super Bowl had scantily clad people grinding against each other as part of the show. That's just par for the course for the Super Bowl and for the NFL. And it just, you know, is what it is. And honestly, at this point, again, this has been going on for well over a decade, and maybe it's going on for two decades. I just wasn't aware, you know. But you have the right to turn on and turn off. We should know by now. You know who the act is, and you can have that right, you know. And I honestly think that's fine. But I don't know how Christians can be defending this. That's what I don't know and I don't understand. And some of it comes up in this post that I read because of Common Grace. And Common Grace has become sort of the catchphrase in progressive circles in Christianity and in the PCA. And people are going to maybe accuse me of slander of calling somebody progressive. I'm just using Brian Chappell, which was our former stated clerk's category for this wing of the PCA. So progressive in the context of in this wing of the PCA. There is this overappreciation for Common Grace such that it hails things like this as good and beautiful and wholesome. Which, was there beauty in it? Yeah, I would say there was. There was some great sort of cultural things that I think, you know, people that have a sense of, you know, in this case, Puerto Rico, but again, somebody else says, well, it reminds me of Cuba. Like, yeah, I think, you know, that could be. It would be like me with the Middle East, and honestly, never been. But, you know, I know the foods, I know the culture, I know the hefles and the festivals and the different music and sounds and dances and everything. And when, you know, whether it's, so my family's from Syria, but if they show something from Saudi Arabia, I even have a sort of a warmth about me when I see that. So like, I understand culturally there's some beauty there. That's the Common Grace piece. The overall theme of the thing that pervaded the entire thing, the overly sensual, overly sexual, overly boundary pushing part, is that Common Grace? But again, par for the course for the Super Bowl. That's not surprising. I think what was even more surprising, and the people that are hailing this should know better because it's not a secret, was the lyrics of the songs that the man was singing. And I don't know, it's not like this is a one-off for him. And don't worry, we'll get to Kid Rock in a few minutes. I don't know if this is a one-off for him. It's not like this is a one-off for him. His music is characterized and pervaded by gratuitous, graphic, sexual celebration with whoever. And Christians are hailing this as some sort of beautiful cultural moment. Now, I tried to validate this multiple ways. I asked Grok, I asked articles, I asked all I can go by is what people are saying because I don't know the language. And quite frankly, I couldn't understand him even if I did because I do pick up on some Spanish words. But there was mumbling and garbling, and I think it was deliberate because he was saying the actual words. Now, I do understand, I think he changed some of the F-bombs that are in his music, and how kind of him for that. He didn't, however, change the graphic, gratuitous sexual acts that our kids were hearing, and quite frankly, many kids who understand Spanish were hearing, and we can, you know, look at some of those. This is on Not the Bee, which is, of course, totally appropriate. Washington Post says, Life halftime show about degenerate sex with randos reflected, quote, wholesome traditional family values. And I wish it was just the Washington Post, but it's also pastors in the PCA, apparently. So here is a tweet of somebody filming off their screen. I guess it was their phone or their TV or something. Bad Bunny, and she's quoting, and when you play the video, which I'm not going to play, she's singing along with him. So she knows the words. She knows the song. It's part of what he does. Bad Bunny said, I'm not going to say it because it's Spanish and I can't really probably read it properly. Which translates to, if your boyfriend doesn't eat your... If you're listening to this, I'm not going to say it. If you're watching on TV, you'll just read it. Then what's the point? And I guess he blessed us by changing a lyric so that he took the F word out of there and he put, so then what's the point then? Because when I looked at the actual lyrics, it's actually different. And she's celebrating this, of course. Here's some of the lyrics on the screen. It seems that she blanks well while high. I want to take a selfie with that huge blank. And it shows. What are we going to do with that huge blank? But those blank are something. Something about being horny. Something about his private part being chased. And she wants him to grab it like a bonga. And all kinds of inappropriate things that I just shouldn't even be reading on here. And here's some other things where people are translating what he's saying. This is part of the beautiful, wholesome, family-like values that people are telling us we're supposed to celebrate. Yeah, crotch grabs and women grabbing their crotch, simulated sex acts. Here's two men simulating having sex, and we are supposed to celebrate this, I suppose. So why I'm doing this video is, again, because, again, I expect from the Super Bowl to have, you know, gratuitous visual acts. I'm shocked that they allowed the lyrics on, but this is part of the normalization of what's going on. And everybody like sheep, a bunch of sheeple running around. You know, I remember I was telling my wife, Susan, how when we were in, I remember this in the eighth grade, and then we went to the same high school together. My wife, Susan, I always said, is she was the high school sweetheart I always wanted. We got together 10 years later, but not the point. We were remembering back to our dances and what we called, or what were called, chill outs in our schools, and how they would play Salt and Peppa and the song Push It. And I think it was another song, Don't Want No Short Blank Blank Teeny Weeny Graphic. And we would be singing this in Catholic schools. And I during the time I said, oh, I can't be saying what I think it's saying because they would never allow this. And everybody just like sheep just goes along with it. And that's, you know, what we have going on here. Now, why is that? And that's why I'm doing this podcast. Because when I pushed back on some of these people, and I did it very well, one person, pastor, I did it a little more aggressively. But with a family member, I did it trying to do it kind of peacefully, saying, you know, I do like the cultural displays that I saw. But how about these lyrics? Like, look this song up. And then I get this boom about Trump and Kid Rock and racists and all that. And I said, well, I didn't say it. I didn't defend Trump. I'm not sure what Trump has to do with this. I actually do know. I'll go into that in a minute. And I didn't defend Kid Rock, although I'll explain the Kid Rock thing in a minute. I didn't say any of that. I didn't even publicly post any of that. So it's not like this person could be referring to some sort of pattern of behavior that I've had toward these things. It was obvious that this person saying she's now a fan of Bad Bunny and talking about how wholesome and beautiful this was. It's all a reaction against what used to be called the religious right. And that's just, you know, and what's being perceived as or interpreted by the culture and bought into by all kinds of people, you know, this hostility against love and inclusivity and immigration and people of color and all that. And so while racism, and we could talk about what that actually is and isn't, is a sin, the opposite, like to go to the other side and then just be accepting of everything, that's got to be a sin too. like there's no justification to accept sin because you're trying to correct for sin. But that's what this is. And look, the NFL is always trying to make statements. I think they're behind the curve on this, quite frankly. I think they're behind the times. I think the times, they are changing, and they're still operating in sort of a woke atmosphere and environment. And in that paradigm, you know, things are changing quickly in our country. But with all the anti-ICE backlash, they specifically picked a guy who's a part of the quote-unquote ICE out, who has not been patriotic with the United States, that this was, you know, the halftime show of the Super Bowl, like the most watched event in America. But that's a choice they're making as a corporation. And honestly, if people vote with their feet or with their remotes, maybe they'll change. Maybe they won't. They have a right, I guess, to do that. And we've lost the dignity of trying to promote virtue in society such that, like, why couldn't it be a wholesome act? But it wasn't. But again, there's things going on in the culture. The NFL makes a decision that is strategic. It is portrayed as the inclusive, loving thing, as opposed to bigotry and hate. That's how this has been postured, and that's how these people are responding. So that when I just ask about the substance, I have to now answer for Trump and Kid Rock and white nationalists and all kinds of other things that have nothing to do with the content or actions that this show had. And, you know, this, it's whataboutism, and you know about whataboutism. Well, you're raising this. Well, what about that? And, you know, whataboutism does have some utility. And what I mean by that is if you are being openly hypocritical, so you are condemning one thing, but you're doing or promoting that on your side, that is a whatabout moment. But whataboutism doesn't exonerate you or excuse you. It actually condemns you both. If it's true. But I wasn't doing any of that. It didn't matter. I had to like get emotional vomit about Trump, which, why? Because again, that's what this is. This is a posed as an event that is a battle of worldviews, as if the Trump worldview represents all Christians who might object to gratuitous sex acts being played on the Super Bowl. And this is where I think, you know, those on the right, whoever, you know, this group represents, where they were attacking this show. And I think the president attacked it for being, but like he was, it seemed like, not attacking it because of the gratuitous sex. And Trump has shown in his history, he's not opposed to locker room talk or worse. He wasn't opposing it based on that. He was opposing it based on the cultural narrative behind it. And that's, you know, a problem for me, because to me, the issue with this was not that they went with a artist from Puerto Rico, which is a territory of the United States. And the fact that it was in that language and reflected that culture, to me, if you're going to attack a people's culture, you're going to get backlash. Now, the Super Bowl has done things for reflecting different cultures. There was a whole slew of Super Bowl performances by classic rock artists for a while there. The Who, AC/DC, where these comeback shows, right? And then there's been hip hop ones, and there's been other ones, and then there's been pop culture ones, and this one was this. Well, then for the right then to attack not the substance of why he's not a good person to put on this stage, even though the Super Bowl has that right, when the most vocal voices go after the cultural aspects of it, well then, yeah, now it becomes a back and forth. So then you create a polarization of people that want the nation to be more inclusive, and so the sides are drawn. And that's what's going on here. And so then people, and in a lot of cases Christians, not happy with the white nationalist rhetoric coming from the right, make an opposite error and now promote and hail and celebrate rank wickedness, because that's what was on that stage. Yes, mixed with beautiful cultural displays of common grace. Yes, of course. I mean, it's almost like by their definition of common grace, you have to accept every act of wickedness because they're done by image bearers, and image bearers all have common grace. So there's some aspect of beauty within them, even though they're doing wicked things. So then Turning Point USA hosts, and they I think they said this, you know, months ago, All-American Halftime Show. And Kid Rock is headlining it, and there's some other acts. And so this is the whataboutism when people critique the Bad Bunny stuff like I just did. What about Kid Rock? Look at his song, Ball with a Ball. I can't even say it. I'd be better off pronouncing the Spanish lyrics than that. So what about that song? Well, okay. This event was hailed as, you know, faith, family, values, America type event. If you go to YouTube and look up Kid Rock teases surprise performance at Super Bowl, you'll get a short. And he basically explains what he's going to do in the show. And, you know, this because people said, well, that's not what he was doing after the fact. Well, I'm going to explain his messaging. They're saying that's not what he was doing. Well, here he is explaining it beforehand that that's exactly what he's doing. There's a message he's trying to send by the way he did these songs. And he's very careful to say this is not, they're not doing this to be divisive, but they are artistically, they love their audiences and they want to give their audiences what they want. So it's an alternative. And I actually think this is a great idea. If you don't want to watch the halftime show, which the NFL has proven time and again, I mean, there's some exceptions, but time and again, it's not the most appropriate thing, or it stylistically is not what I want to be watching. Usually it's very chaotic. It's often it's too frenetic for me, generally, whoever it is, unless it's just straight up, you know, a person on a stage. So they have this. Now the question is, well, this isn't wholesome. Okay. So now we're getting into the whataboutism and the, you know, is this contradictory to condemn Bad Bunny and what Bad Bunny did on stage and what he said on stage and who he is in the past with Kid Rock. So I'm going to share the lyrics on the screen again as I read them. Ball with the ball, da bang, diggy, diggy. said the boogie, drop the boogie. Okay. Besides that, he did one verse of this song. So, okay, this is what it says. And this is for the questions that don't have answers. The midnight glancers and the topless dancers. The gander freaks, car packed with speakers. The G's with the 40s, so gangsters with the 40s. And the chicks with beepers. The northern lights and the southern comfort. Alcohol. And it don't even matter if their veins are punctured. All the crackheads, the critics, the cynics, and all my heroes in the methadone clinics. So he's talking about alcohol, girls. The worst thing he says is the topless dancers. I don't know if chicks with beepers is somehow overly offensive to somebody. The gangsters with the 40s, you know, 40-ounce beers. The veins being punctured. He's talking about people doing drugs. And then he says all the crackheads, the critics, and the cynics. Now, how did he start the song? And this is for the questions that don't have answers. I think that's profound. I don't think he was trying to be profound back then. But this is life without answers. A life that's longing and searching. And while I don't know what he meant when he first wrote it, this comes to some kind of importance, and I think why he did this verse in the context of the TPUSA show. And then he goes, and all my heroes in the methadone clinic. So even then, in the methadone clinics, my understanding of those are there, you know, that's where people go for rehab. They're dosed with something else to get them off the drug they're on. All you blank at the IRS, not necessarily, not a four-letter word, but I'm just not going to say it. For the crooked cops and the cluttered desk. For the shots of Jack and the cap of meth, half pints of love and the fifths of stress. For the hookers, all tricking out in Hollywood. For the hoods of the world, misunderstood. And that's kind of the point here. I said, it's all good and it's all fun. Now get in the pit and try to love someone. And, you know, what's the message? So you have like a lot of sinful stuff going on, right? But then you have included there the critics and the cynics, people who are against this. Not just the druggies, but those his heroes who are getting off the drugs in the methadone clinics. And for all the hoods of the world misunderstood, the funny thing is what the people that are hailing this other show of this beautiful show of inclusivity and love are not realizing is that's the message of this song that they're condemning. Because they're saying, look at what he said in that song. But hookers and topless girls. What did he say? He didn't say anything graphic. He referenced them. Now you can say, well, that's not wholesome. And I'll give you that. So again, I'm not going to, maybe it shouldn't have been. But the comparison that to the mentioning of topless dancers and hookers is the same thing as talking about guys eating. I'm not going to say it. And it's not even what you think, honestly. It's more graphic, more grotesque than even what you're thinking. The idea that him jumping around on the stage is the same as Bad Bunny continually grabbing himself and others on the stage, simulated sex acts, both heterosexual and homosexual, grinding, gratuitous sex, and the whole message of the song is to promote that. I mean, that's equivocation. It's two different things. Now, that's the only verse he sang. There's other verses. And the point I'm saying about this is the song that they should love is I said it's all good and it's all fun. Now get in the pit and try to love someone. And it's a reference, I think, to the mosh pit where just people get in and you didn't know who was in there. It didn't matter. You were just having fun together. So whether you're the druggie or the person getting off the drugs, whether you're the wild person or the critic or the cynic, or those in from whatever hood you're from in the world are misunderstood. It's all good and it's all fun. Now get in the pit and try to love someone. Now, anyway, you can disagree with that message. You can say it's still not inappropriate. That's fine. Okay. But the comparison just doesn't hold up. Now, the significance of this, he only does one verse of it. And then it goes quiet. Lights go out. He disappears. Two instrumentalists show up, play a hymn. It's somber. It's quiet. It goes from this extreme rowdiness to a hymn. And then he comes out and is introduced by his God-given name, or his parents' given name, or his real name, whatever, not by Kid Rock. In other words, there's a change. He's dressed differently, and he sings just an awesome song, country song. And he adds two verses to it, which included the Bible, Jesus Christ coming, hanging on a cross, for forgiveness of sins for those who accept him. And it was really symbolic. And again, he references this in the Fox video that I referenced and showed the screenshot from earlier. So it's not like we're just gaslighting or making this up to sort of reclaim it. That was the point. He says that's the point. And why it resonated with me is because I lived that life. I mean, I wasn't famous like Kid Rock or anything. I was a mechanical engineer manager with Procter & Gamble, traveling the world on business travel, on expense accounts, living and partying wild and hard, and celebrating the life. And the Lord changed me. And this is something the left just doesn't have a category for, is actual redemption. I guess they do. They celebrate when their people have sort of, you know, redempted. They're very forgiving of the sins in their group, depending on the sins. But if it's somebody who's conservative, they just have no category for that. And, you know, a lot of Christians don't either. And that's why Side B was such a thing in the PCA, because they don't actually believe the Spirit actually changes a person. So they don't have a problem with somebody clinging to some fallen identity because they don't think you can really change. But I know what the Lord did in my heart. And it wasn't lost on me as I watched it, as he came out, the wild Kid Rock that I saw in concert in 2002, I guess. Bayfront Park. I think Rob Zombie was there. I don't know. It's a big palooza thing. And for me, the music and the life reminds me of friendships that I have and in some cases still have. And it brings back just really mixed emotions, warm feelings of, again, the relationships, the friendships, some of the adventures that were not debaucherous that I had, but then also the sin that I was in. And as the scene shifts from one verse of the song, which was very, I think, strategically chosen, and again, and this is for the questions that don't have answers, and then what does he do? He comes out as himself, not as Kid Rock, dressed differently, sings this song, talks about the free offer of the gospel and the truth of Scripture and salvation and forgiveness of sins in Jesus Christ. He is the answer to the questions that don't have answers. There is an answer. His name is Jesus. So it resonated with me. Now, whether or not you think, you know, the reference that this should have been sung because this song is celebrating debauchery, and so then you are celebrating it and you're kind of enjoying it because the beat is awesome if you like rock and roll. I mean, it's awesome without the lyrics. Okay, I that's an argument. That's an argument. I just still think it's a long way. It's a big gap to critique that one thing. Bad Bunny's lyrics are over the line. Like, it's almost like, because it's hard to determine where the line is, there is no line. No, there's a line, and gratuitous sex acts in graphic detail, which are the whole point of the song, are different than a reference to topless dancers and strippers. The message of the song is different. The aesthetic of the environment is different. In the one, you have grabbing of your genitals constantly, and many people, women and men, doing that. Grinding, simulated sex acts. Bending over and showing your underwear and your butts. And you have another guy jumping around the stage. And I did see another, this dishonest thing. I saw multiple dishonest things about this. One was like this screenshot of Kid Rock grabbing his crotch, supposedly. And I say supposedly because it was blurry and you just couldn't tell. And so when I watched it, he didn't grab it. He almost deliberately didn't, because I know he would have in the past. And his arm would come down and be on his thigh, or it would come down in sort of in front and low, and they grabbed probably the perfect frame where it looked like he was grabbing his crotch. But he was just jumping around the stage. And to think that that's worse or the same thing as watching people basically having sex on stage with their clothes on, I don't see it. And then the other dishonest thing that I saw was, you know, like, they, again, so this is what they do. This is Mike Cosper, professed Christian on X. So we're not just going to critique, again, things that are said or done, but we're going to mock as a part of it. So, you know, and he how it was a terrible performance by Kid Rock, and his lip syncing was horrible. Well, he might have been lip syncing, because I know they do that. I mean, it's not a surprise. But when Mike was corrected, and it wasn't that he was lip syncing, it was that the sound from TPUSA's stream was off from the video, which is Bush League, quite honestly. So TPUSA, come on, man. Because it wasn't just Kid Rock, it was everybody was off, or a lot of them were. And when he was corrected, he didn't correct it, Mike Cosper. You know, he left it out there. And that's the kind of the spirit of the age, you know. And I just think Christians ought to be better than this. And that leads me to the Trump tweet. I'm sure you've heard this. And, you know, and why am I bringing this up in the context of that? Because what it is when Christians are defending the indefensible, it's causing others who rightly are angered by that to jump to the other side and defend the indefensible. And so that's kind of my point and theme in this long monologue. And so one error leading to another. And Christians, we got to be better than that. And so Trump shares on his Truth Social, I think it was, I only saw a screenshot, The screenshot made it look like he shared a racist image of the Obamas. It turns out that was a video clip, so somebody had to specifically pause it right at the last second of the video. The explanation was it was a staffer who showed it and shared, and he or she showed Trump it was on election fraud. And Trump only watched a little bit of it, and he said, yeah, that's fine, go ahead and share it. And some people don't believe that. Well, I've worked with millionaires and four millionaires, honestly, and I can tell you that's kind of par for the course. It's believable. I'm not saying I wasn't there. I don't know if that's exactly what happened. But yeah, they're not going to sit. They don't have time for anything. They trust who's working for them. They show it. They sign off on it. They move on. And so Trump is saying he didn't know that was in the video, because it was. What happens is one video ends and another video starts. And it was a clip that had the first sort of frame of the second video as part of the tweet. Did the staffer know? I don't know. You know, I can only accept. All I can say is Trump should have apologized, and he doesn't. He's the leader of our country. I expect more of him, especially since Christians are holding him up as this great Christian leader. I don't think Trump's a Christian. I think he's been favorable to Christianity. But you don't have to be a Christian to apologize to a former president and his wife, who have a great marriage, it seems like, who, you know, their family life is nothing to mock or scoff at. An argument can be made that the Obamas have a better family sort of life than Trump and his multiple wives and all that. And again, there's forgiveness for Trump for those things, but there's no reason to mock Obama for that. And, you know, this is an affront to God. You know, all people are made in the image of God. To mock them, and in such a way, with, you know, apes or whatever, and given the trope from the racist past, there's no place for that. Now, the video had all kinds of faces on all kinds of videos from The Lion King, including Biden, but this definitely had the appearance of just degrading of humanity of black people. And it should be easy for Trump to apologize, and he didn't. And so I understand why people on the left get inflamed, and even people who were traditionally on the right get inflamed. And then what happens is they jump, the pendulum goes the other way, and they start defending the indefensible on the other side. And I'm saying, as Christians, let's not do any of it. So this was a monologue. Anyhow, this is Pastor George for Grace at the Gates. If you don't agree with me, I'm still your friend. That's my Super Bowl message.
If you want to know the worth of a seminary, go take a look at their graduates. Our graduates are all over the world. They're planting churches, they're revitalizing churches, they're translating the Bible, they're starting discipleship movements. It's heart-shaking, life-changing, and just mind-expanding of what God is doing.
You know, sometimes I really do have to pinch myself that what I get to do with the ministries at BTS, the engaging with the students and the impact that God uses us to have on the lives of our students, it's a pleasure, it's an honor, and it's a joy.
Jesus is still building his church, so we need to equip the pastor teachers who equip the saints. We need to equip the elders who shepherd the church. And I am grateful that Birmingham Theological Seminary is available to be a part of the expansion of the kingdom of God in these very crucial days.